So like I said, 1 Peter, we are talking about this as the summation of Peter's life. These two little tiny books, just a few chapters each, all together, a few pages. It is what he's lived for, what he's written about, what he's learned over his life. And we are going to meet that one person, or a couple people, that really affected his life. And Jesus is one of those people, right? That we've seen Jesus, he's talked about Jesus, he's had encounters with Jesus, he's sworn about Jesus, he's gotten in trouble with Jesus, he's done a whole bunch of things, he said stupid things. But then he learned from them. And it might have been a decades of learning to put it together, okay? But we're going to go over what is a very controversial, also, chapter. It's a tough chapter, all right? Especially in our modern age, okay? And we heard from the Screwtape Letters about modern thought and modern ideas. Not all modern thought and modern ideas are always good, okay? So I want to talk about 20 years ago, all right? Just about 20 years ago, I put together a list. And that list was because I had gone to a friend and asked that friend, he happened to be a pastor, okay, lived out of state. I went and I wanted to talk to him. And I put together a list due to his advice to me. He had said that years and years ago, he was challenged by a friend to write down a list and said, God will supply all your needs. And so he wrote down a list for a wife. Okay? And he said he put as much detail on that list as he wanted. Everything he wanted. In fact, he put, I want a wife with red hair. Now you may think that's an interesting thing to put on there. All right? But I will tell you, years later, he's married to a wife with red hair and had three daughters, almost all of them red hair, okay? So whatever it was that made him where he liked red hair, okay, was one of those little details. He put it on the list and God says, I like that you're asking for that. And he did it, all right? So I thought I would learn myself a lesson from him and I put down a list. And I believe I had 24 things on my list. Things I wanted in a wife. Okay? Some were general. Some were very specific. I'm not going to tell you all of them right now. And probably never will I tell you all of them. But I prayed for that for 2.5 years. Okay? Every day I prayed for that list. That God would provide a list would provide a wife with every characteristic and or situation that I had on that list. And guess what? He did. Okay? One day, my friend called me up and said, I've got this girl you've got to meet. And I'm like, okay, I've done this before. But doesn't work out well normally, okay? And it's a mutual friend of a mutual friend. I'm like, oh, great. This is going to be fantastic. So I really just didn't want to even go at this point. I'm like, this is not a good idea. But I had promised that I would. And so I finally got ready. And I went. And 8 months later, we got married. Okay, right? It wasn't long, all right? And I wasn't super young, but I was still young, I guess. All I can tell you is, now we've been married for those years, okay, since then, after all of that occurred. And everything that you thought that you would do during marriage, or the way you thought it would be during marriage, it is not necessarily that way. You have an idea in your mind that things will just go this way. But you've only lived with yourself. and you've only had to answer to yourself, essentially, throughout your life. And as you get older and get more independence, you answer more and more to yourself. All right? But marriage is not about that. Marriage is about sometimes having to bend in ways that you're not even comfortable with. All right? Sometimes having to say, you know what, I'm going to put that other person first. And it's hard to think that way. And it takes a long time. Some people never think that way in a marriage. But if you want a truly good marriage, you will learn to bend in a healthy way towards that other person. Not because they force you. Not because they're making you do it. Or because you think it's some law. But because you chose them. You loved them. And love is a decision. Love is not a feeling. Okay? Love is to say, I will love this person. I can love this person. Like God decided he would love us. We're not very lovable lots of times. Compared to God, we're pretty nasty little worms hanging around here on earth. We have no righteousness. We have nothing good to bring to this whole relationship. God brings all the good things. And yet God bends and gives of himself and is kind and merciful and forgiving and gracious again and again and again and again and again. And we say, I have a great relationship with God. No, I have a God that's great. That's what I have. My relationship isn't much at all because of me. If I have a good relationship with God, it's all because he reached out first. Okay? So we're going to go and look at this very, what I'm going to call a very stressful group of verses for some people. It has caused great angst and great division amongst many, many people throughout the ages. There are great groups of people that think that the Bible is an ancient, old book that means nothing. And they use one of these passages to say it, to prove it, because we know better, is what they say. All right, so let's go to 1 Peter chapter number 3, and I'm going to talk about a couple of goats before we move on. If you imagine yourself, while you go to 1 Peter chapter 3, if you imagine yourself in this spot, okay, and this right here is a big ravine. Okay? And this here is a big log. Okay? Across the ravine. This is a fall to your death. Rocks below. Terrible rocks, okay? All right. There's a little goat here. Goat. Got a snout too. Goat named Oma. Happens to be over here. Coming this way. I'm going this way. There's a little goat over here. That goat's name is Camry. Perchance. They're going to cross the log. The log seems very large, and yet it is only large enough for one to pass at a time. Both Alma and Camry decide, I'm going to cross this log. Heading from different directions, they come at a meeting point right in the center. Right there. The log is a bit narrow, and these particular goats, Camry and Alma, feel like
I should not have to back up. You should back up.
So they have options here. A couple of options. Neither of them decides they're going to back up. They both want to get across the log. Maybe it's a bit narrow for them to back up. Maybe they're a little scared to back up. So they have a couple of options. Do you know what they could do?
Jump.
They could jump. Okay. And hope that they don't jump at the same time and hit each other and fall to their deaths. Is there anything a little more orderly and organized? Or less orderly? They could buck each other.
Yeah,
look, knock Cameron right off that log.
Or Cameron could knock
Cameron could knock off the log, right? Somebody would get through and somebody would not. Right? With those options. Maybe neither would get through if they both jumped and didn't coordinate their jumps. Okay? I'm jumping lower, you're jumping higher, or something like that. Okay? But there's probably one safe thing they could do. One of them could lay down, and the other could walk over top. What do you think about that?
Everybody just went, ooh, I don't even want to be the one that laid down.
Right? I'd be the one that walked over top. And yet, what if they took turns laying down? They both came and did that. And tomorrow they come to the very same log at the very same point, because now they're trying to cross backwards, go back to the spot they wanted. They realize the grass is better on the other side, right? And they come to the very same impasse tomorrow, and they say, okay, yesterday you laid down, today I'm laying down. What do you think about that? Eh? You'd rather buck them off?
Yeah, right.
And that's the truth with a lot of people. They would much rather see the other goat fall to his death rather than bend down. That takes something to trigger that. What if that was Alma, the goat that you love very dearly? And you did not want her to be hurt. Or him, as the case may be. I don't know if Alma the goat is a boy or girl. I'm just saying. What happens if that's the case? All of a sudden, maybe you don't want to just buck him off the log. What if Alma's insistent on not getting down and being walked on this time? Tough luck, she's done. Sorry about that. Don't ever meet a Camry on a log, I'm just saying. So, the whole point is this. There is a way in which both can cross safely, even if they decide to take turns. Both can cross safely, but it takes a little bit of give. Somebody's not always going to be on top. Somebody's got to go on the bottom once in a while for this to work. You can't both say, my pride is more important than what you think. Okay? So now let's go to 1 Peter chapter number 3. The verses that put everybody's cackles up, or spurs out, or whatever you call it, all right? 1 Peter chapter number 3, verse number 1, as we go, we're going to go verse number 1 through 6. Can we read those, please? We'll start with Jason. Nice and loud. It's your favorite verse, Jason.
Right. Well, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives.
While they behold your chaste day conversations coupled with fear.
Do not adorn yourselves outwardly by regular hair, by wearing a cool garment and fine clothing. But let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not buildable, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God.
For as it was in the old time, the holy woman also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands.
Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. What do you think about that? Just stretching. What do you think about that verse? What does it say? Verse number one.
Wives, submit to your husband.
So, whoa, yeah, that's like, that puts people's ire up. You know what ire is? It's like kind of a anger or a inside, the fire inside of them. Oh, I can't do that. Just kind of like when I first said, well, which one lays down? One of them has to lay down. Okay? Is that always, according to that verse, is that always going to be the wife? That has to always say, I won't do what I want to do. According to that section, that's what that says. But we're not finished. Just want to let you know. It's not the end of the story. And let me tell you that there's a whole bunch of middle stuff in there that people focus on. They focus on certain things. What did you see in there? What were women not supposed to do?
Dress fancy.
No, okay. So fancy dress. Can't do that, right? Oh, can't braid your hair. Oh, boy. Can't wear gold. Okay? And what are you supposed to do? Well, either one, okay, submissive, which people just hate that word, right? Because that seems so like I have to bend and be somebody that I'm not. And obedient, okay? Those are words that are in there, definitely. It more so says have, what does it say to have, what kind of spirit?
Servant.
Quiet and, what does it say, content in yours?
Gentle.
Oh, gentle, quiet and gentle, yes. I was going to say meek, which gentle is a good word too. So, quiet and gentle. It doesn't say your body. That it's got to be quiet and gentle. Doesn't say your personality, but it says your spirit. That's the deepest part of you. Quiet and gentle is the deepest part of you. If you have a quiet and gentle spirit, that really means that you have it under control. That means God has imprinted something on you, okay? Right? You have it under control. There are people who withstand great, terrible things and who have been tortured for what they believe in, okay, over time. Been terrible things that have been done to people. They've been taken, they've been cut in half with saws, okay? They have been tortured by tying them to a stake and burning them to death. They've been tortured by bleeding them to death or by cutting them in pieces, and they've done it quietly. Think about, we learned about that young man, Stephen. What did he do when he died? He was stoned to death. Big rocks thrown at him until he lost total consciousness and then his life. And what was he like? Would you say he was loud and boisterous? Or would you say he's quiet and gentle?
Quiet and gentle.
I would say definitely quiet and gentle. The only thing he really said back to them after he told them about Jesus, and then they decided we're going to stone him, was he said, "Do not lay this sin to their charge," the people that were stoning him to death. In other words, just like Jesus said, "Father, forgive them. They don't even know what they're doing." Because Jesus had a quiet and gentle spirit. In fact, he was called by his personality meek and lowly, which is not what you think of as you think of the great and powerful king, right? But they are characteristics of a great and powerful king. They are some of the most powerful characteristics of a great and powerful king. To have that much control over your spirit, not to say you're forcing me to do this, but to say, "I willingly do this." That takes power. That takes strength from within in a spirit that you can't do without. All right. So if you are a person with a quiet and gentle spirit, you don't have to fight to get your own way. You're not conniving. You're not pushing your way. You're not angling, looking for the next way to get your own way. You're saying, "I understand a bigger picture. I don't need to have everything that I want. And why don't I need to have it? Because my motivation is something bigger." What was Christ's motivation on the cross? His biggest motivation. Why was Jesus here? Why did he die?
To finish God's plan.
Even bigger. To save him. But what's the motivation behind it?
Love.
Okay? And love, real true love, and I don't mean a feeling that you have where your heart is twitterpated or something like that, okay? I mean the choice, the decision. That is, real true love is something that drives you to be able to say, "I will set aside my desire for you." All right? I'm not worried about all the way I look on the outside. This is not saying you can't have a fancy dress. I don't care if you have a fancy dress or not. But it can't be what you're all about. It's not saying you can't braid your hair. Braided hair looks awesome. That's great. I don't know. Gold, you can have gold. Wear it all over. I don't care. But it's not what you're about. And that doesn't matter to me if you're a man or a woman, really. Okay? But what Peter is saying is, why does he say, "Do this. Don't do this. Do this. Be quiet and gentle." Why did he say it? It was in there, and we read right over it, and we kind of missed it. Right in the very first word, verse, at the end of the first verse, what was the point of being this way?
To be won by the conduct of their wives.
All right, who's going to be won by the conduct of their wives?
The husband.
The husband. How do you think Peter knows this? Well, do you think that's the total story? turn, and we're not going to because we don't have time, but if you were to turn into the book of Mark, the first chapter, verse 29 through 31, you would find a nifty little story about a woman. A woman that's only mentioned, I believe, once in the Bible, who's very sick. And that nifty little woman who's very, very sick has a visitor with Jesus. That nifty woman is Peter's mother-in-law. Okay? Jesus comes, heals his mother-in-law, and she gets up a moment after she's healed and makes a great big meal in celebration and serves everybody a great big meal because she's so happy she's healthy. That's an amazing story. But what you get out of that is what? What's the one fact you now know about Peter? He was married, right? In order to have a mother-in-law, got to have a wife, right? That's kind of how that works, right? So he was married. And what did I tell you about this book? This is the summation of what Peter learned in his life, which I believe it totally was that he had a wife that was kind and gentle. And when Peter was a big jerk sometimes, she was kind and gentle and cared about him. And when Peter said stupid things, she was kind and gentle. And he came home and said, "You know what those stupid guys in the boats did today? I can't believe they did that. I told them again and again and again." And she just looked at him and smiled. "How can I help you?" And what did that do for Peter? Eventually, he got to the point that said, "Wow, I seem to be the only one making all the noise all the time." God convicted him, and he used his wife to do it. Now, we talked about Jesus. Jesus makes a great impact, a huge impact in Peter's life. But don't underestimate the fact that Peter learned a great deal from his wife. And so he's begging other people to say, "Look at, all I'm telling you is I was the guy that said dumb things, that did dumb things, and my wife was so kind, so gentle, cared so much about me, and she quietly said nothing oftentimes when she probably should have kicked me in the butt and said, 'Peter, you're so stupid. You always got to say things. You always got to do this.'" But you know what? If she'd have said that, he probably would not have been as influenced by her as he was. Because she had control in her spirit. And she could say, "Not very much." Right? And have a great impact. Sometimes not saying much at all is having a bigger impact, all right, than lots and lots of words, or constantly being like a drippy faucet on him, saying, "You always got to do this, you always got to do that, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this, you got to do that." Eventually, people shut it off after they've heard it too many times. But when she spoke, because she probably didn't that often, she reserved her words for wisdom, and when she did speak, he learned from her. All right? Because she chose to be. And that's why Peter is not, he's begging people to say, if you want influence in your life, if you want to do something for the fact of love, my wife loved me and that made a difference to me. All right? And it changed my life. And he said, "You know what I learned?" Verse 7. 7 and 8, please.
"Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered.
Panamabiye, all one mind have fashioned one of another love as brethren. Be pitiful, be courteous.
Courteous, right? Be care about her. This is what I learned, Peter said. First of all right, give them understanding. Don't think you know everything. So, I had this for a couple of weeks. We had events in our house, and before we do events, we like to kind of try to go through and clean our house. And so, I wanted to mop the house. Okay? Go through, mop the kitchen, mop a couple other rooms. Well, I have a mop that I like to use. And Amy does not like that mop. So, she was on the phone with some teacher or something like that. And so I couldn't really ask her directly where this mop was. And as I was going around, I went upstairs, I went downstairs, I looked in closets, I looked all over behind the doors where I thought this mop was. And finally I'm like, it's on the porch, isn't it? She doesn't like my mop. She put it on the porch because she probably threw it out. After I went out to the porch, it wasn't there. And then I'm like, and I took her dumb mop, right? Because it was a stupid mop. I hate this mop. And I go to get chemicals out of this closet that we have. It happens to be a mop closet, okay? I'm just saying. There's normally never a mop in there, to be fair. But after I'm thinking to myself, she has taken my mop and thrown it out because she doesn't like my mop. I went on for probably 15, 20 minutes in my mind about this whole scenario and the things she must have thought about this mop and me and all these things. And when I got to it, she put my mop in the mop closet. Okay? Right? Because we never put mops in the mop closet. I'm just saying. Okay, from the women of the right. Because there's a whole long story about it. Anyways, we don't typically store them. We put aprons in the mop closet. Typically. I know. Just either way, okay? Either way, what I'm trying to tell you is, in my mind, I made her an enemy over mop. I mean, it was dumb. But I did it all in my mind. She didn't even know what I'm thinking. Right? I made the whole thing up in my mind about her throwing away the mop. Because she doesn't like my mop. I took all the little clues that I thought I had, put them all together, and made my story. That is not dwelling with her with understanding. That is not giving her courteousness and kindness and treating her in such a way that I put her above myself. That's putting me first. So I'm telling you this. Maybe someday in my memoirs, I will write about a mop somehow, right? But I'm telling you this to say we do this in stupid things in our lives. And this is what Peter is saying, because I'm sure Peter had the mop syndrome 100 times in his life. The stupid things he thought she did, or he assigned her the motive of not doing this right, or not thinking right about this, or whatever. And in the end, he was wrong about that. Right? So what he said is, this is what I've learned over my life. As she sat there quietly and said, it's in the mop closet, dear. The mop. You know, it's in the mop closet, right? Then he learned and said, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving them honor. Not thinking, okay, because I like a mop because I'm a stronger guy. And I say, this is a big mop, and if you're going to really mop, you got to have a real mop. The stupid little foam mops. It's useless, right? Right? Or Swiffer mops. All that stuff. I don't even like all those things. I want a mop with strings and just clean things, right? If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. But yet, when she does a fine job with her own way. But I'm thinking, well, my way must be the best way because it's my way, right? That's our human nature that kicks in. And it is often Peter learns this and says, you know what I have to do? I have to be dwelling with knowledge, right? That means not just don't be stupid about how you act. Don't treat other person. And it says, be courteous. And put her first. It is my job, if I'm a husband, always to put her first. Not all husbands do that. Not all wives do that. But if there is that give and take in that relationship, okay, with courteousness and quiet and gentle spirit, watch out what a married couple can do. If they can live that way, if you can set those things aside, your pride, and first time the first goat comes down and says, I'll lay down, you go over top. The next time they come together, the other goat says, no, I'm laying down. I choose to do that and treat you better than walk over top of you. You can create a relationship in which it's not a, you have to do this because you are the man or you are the woman. It's a, you do this, I want to do this for you because I love you. All right? One last story that Peter puts in there as we learn from what he's learned. He talks about having submission in all of your life. Being calm, doing this type of thing in your relationships, and learning that you don't always have to be first. In fact, you'll make more impact if you don't always have to strive to be the one on top. Okay? He comes on this little strange set of verses. He talks about Christ, and he says Christ was submissive. Came to this earth. He bent down. He was the one on the bottom while we walked over top of him. The great King of Kings bent down and the human race walked right over top of him. But he knew it was the only way that we could ever be with him, that we could ever see something more than beyond our own selfishness. He was the first to bend down. Well, that's power. Power in your spirit to be able to do that. Gentleness, quietness, meekness, to say, I don't have to have the position. I'm okay doing this because my motivation is love. Right? Not only did he do that, but in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse number 18, I'm going to read this little section and follow along in your Bibles. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18. For Christ has also once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God. Okay, that was him laying down, suffering for sins, just for unjust. All right, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit. All right, and when his Spirit was that powerful that he could lay down his life, this is what he did. Verse 19. By which he also went and preached unto the spirits in prison, which sometime were disobedient, when once the long suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was a preparing, wherein few, that is, in eight souls, were saved by water. The like figure whereunto even baptism doth now save us, not putting away of the filth of the flesh, but answer is of good conscience towards God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is on the right hand of God, angels and authorities and powers being made subject to him. Christ not only came to this earth, but when he died, the night he died on the cross, the afternoon where he died on Friday afternoon, okay, when he was in the grave, he took a special trip. His trip was to hell, okay, or what we call hell now. It's the holding place, the prison, he calls it. And there were spirits in prison there, people that were held there from a very special time in history. In particular, he went to hell and he spoke to and talked to those people that were in that holding place. Not only did he come to earth and say, well, I'll save those who are going to save, I will go down into the depths of hell for those who have rejected me. I will find them. I will talk to them. Who were they? They were a group of people, the world population at the time of Noah. The people who did not make it in the ark. Now, this is kind of a weird thing, isn't it? Strange. You don't hear a lot talked about this. But what Peter is doing, and he apparently knew it, whether he talked directly to Jesus about it after his resurrection, and Jesus told him about this situation, but he went down into hell and he preached to, he talked to, he shared the whole story with these people who never made it in the ark because they did not believe. They would not follow Noah. They would not believe, and then they lived their lives and they died and drowned in the flood. Why did he go down there?
So that he gives.
The question is, how low would he bend? All the way. Now, I don't know the outcome of that. I don't know the words that were said there, and maybe someday in heaven we'll find out. I don't know whether people were taken from that place, whether there were believers that were harvested from that place. But he loved them enough to come and personally speak to them in the midst of all of the group that had turned away their whole lives. During the flood of Noah. All of those who said, I don't want God and I don't care what you do. There'll never be rain, there'll never be a flood. Noah's a fool for following that God. But he went down personally, not to prove a point, not to say I'm more important, ha ha, I made it, I'll show you, because that's not Christ. Christ went down to say, here I am. Here's the wounds. Here's what I did. In his spirit, before he was raised, he was there. He visited them. He spoke to them. Because Christ was not only willing to bend to earth, but he was willing to go all the way. And that was... And then the last verse says, and now he's sitting at the right hand of the Father, and everyone is subject unto him. So I think what Peter's trying to say in this chapter, if we're going to sum this all up to finish up, if you're going to sum this all up, this one chapter, we're going to say, if you will be that quiet and gentle spirit in your heart, you will have more opportunity and more power and more ability, and God will work in a stronger way through you than he will with someone who is willing to buck the person off the log. Okay? He wants that. That's where God starts. He's in a person in a heart like that. That's who he says, I can do everything through that person. That person who's willing to bend. So this is not about the war between the sexes. This is not about that. This is an illustration, and Peter's saying, my wife was amazing. Let me tell you about her. And here's some things I learned to do better and treat her better. But let me tell you about Christ. This is really how low Christ went. And when he was all done, he went to the tip top of the world because he went down to the bottom. Top of the world, top of heaven. And everybody, every creature, everything ever created is now subject to him because he went to the bottom. Christ said, if you want to be leader of all, you must be a servant of all. And that's what he did. He became the servant of all. We don't like to do it. We don't want to bend. It's a natural thing in us humans. Not going to bend. I'm not giving in. Let them give in. We look at it as weak. As humans. Society says, we're not going to do that. Power for me. That's what we say. But that's not what Christ said. Christ said, if you want to be greatest of all, you will be the servant of all. If you want to be, if you insist on being the greatest and trying to get that position all the time, you will not be in charge, for real. People respect a person who's going to work beside you and help you much more than a person who says, I'm the boss, you go do that. That doesn't go very far. Now we can learn a lot from Christ and learn a lot from what he did. And from what Peter says, out of my life, this is what I got. You want to be something great? Be a servant. Kind, gentle, quiet spirit. Become that person and let God do great things through you. Thank you very much.